Hello, hello, hello.
Good evening.
Or afternoon or morning.
Depending. This episode's going to be a real scream. All right, so this is Big Planet Comics, episode 37.
Woo.
Or just Big Planet Comics podcast, I guess. This is not just the Big Planet Comics episode
37.
37.5. 37.5, indeed. Yeah, so we're here.
Yeah, hello. We are alive.
My name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
That's us.
Woo.
We're still alive.
We're still alive.
Just like that Pearl Jam song.
Just like that Pearl Jam song. So, as always, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes if you want to.
You should. So that we don't have to remind you again.
Yep. You can go to our Facebook page if you want to.
You could tweet us.
It's at facebook.com/BigPlanetComics.
Oh, got it right.
Well, what's the tweet?
If you want to, it's at Big Planet Comics.
It's true.
If you don't want to, that's okay, too. You can just listen. You can just lurk.
Our lurkers.
You can be a lurker. Just lurking around a corner, listening to this podcast.
Let freedom ring, baby.
just keep on trucking. All right, so we got a couple things coming up here.
What you got?
Well, I'm just going to say one of them.
Okay.
On April 14th, 13 days after April Fool's Day.
So is this a joke?
No, this is dead serious.
All right.
We've got Justin Jordan and Trad Moore.
Shazam!
I have no idea what that was. The creators of The Strange Town of Luther Strode.
Awesome.
So they're excellent.
I was hoping there was like applause on here somewhere, but there's not.
Just randomly hit buttons you might get.
Yeah, they're going to be at our Vienna store and our College Park store. Oh, that button doesn't even do anything.
That was the applause button, but nobody wanted to applaud.
Yeah, so that'll be awesome. That comic is the greatest.
The bomb. It is really great.
It's the bomb diggity.
As the kids say.
As the kids say. It's like one of the fattest comics that's come out all year.
So dope.
It's fly.
It's mad ill.
Yeah, it's definitely mad.
Is it hep?
Yeah, that grossed me out when you said mad ill. All right, so I don't know. What's been going on, you guys?
I crashed my car.
What?
Did you crash your car?
Accident. I had an accident.
Well, I didn't figure you crashed it on purpose. It was like an insurance scam.
Just happened.
What'd you crash it into?
Another car.
Was your car driving and their car was driving?
Yep. We were cruising down 123 through Tyson's and the guy decided to bounce his bumper into my hubcap.
Oh, I noticed you were missing a hubcap.
I didn't notice that until I took it to get it repaired today. They're like, oh, you lost your hubcap. I'm like, so I did.
We should steal a hubcap for your car.
I got three others if you want to grab one of those.
That's fine. Nice. Just put it on the side that I don't have to look at all the damn time.
I'm sorry.
That's crazy. I didn't know you crashed your car.
Yep. It was very exciting.
Did it get messed up at all?
No. It smashed in the
besides
fender.
Besides the hubcap.
And it took the hubcap off, smashed up the fender, and like bent the frame just enough that the door wouldn't open. And so I went and had it inspected today. And the guy went into the back of his shop and brought out like a piece of metal and basically pried the panel. Now my door opens. I'm like, cool.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah. So all in all, you know, it was as good an accident as it can be and still cost $1,300.
So what about you, Nick? Top that.
Yep. Top that. I saw a shooting star today.
Did you?
Did you catch it in a net, go flying to another planet?
What did you wish for?
World peace.
Oh, did it come true?
No.
He just told us what it was. So
that's when I realized there is no God.
Wow.
I found a four-leaf clover.
Did you?
No, but I read somebody's Facebook status that did.
Aww. Lucky you.
He found somebody who found a four-leaf clover.
Yeah, I started playing Mass Effect 3.
Oh, how do you like it?
It's good so far.
It's good? Don't you mean amazing?
It's totally not like Star Wars or Star Trek.
These two are addicted.
I'm not addicted. I've only played for like 2 hours.
Jared's like played 48 hours.
Over 20 hours in the last week.
You only started playing at like 48 hours.
That's true.
And then Nick and I recorded another one of our podcasts, our moonlighting podcast last night.
Yeah.
How'd it go?
Magnum Beam Live, where we play video game music. It went well.
Let's play some Mass Effect music.
We did play some Mass Effect music.
I know.
It went like this,
Yeah, Mass Effect definitely has some creepy music.
Yeah, it was cool though. It was fun.
Nice.
Yeah, so I think that's about it. I caught up on some comics. Nick caught up on some comics.
I did.
Jared, you catch up on some comics?
Yep.
What'd you catch up on?
Stuff.
I caught up on Scalps. That was
I can't remember.
Oh, you did? That's good.
I'm excited for the finale.
Oh, man. Were you behind on Scalps? That's like your favorite comic of all time.
I'm always behind on Scalps because I have to read all those other comics.
That's true.
I caught up on Wolverine and the X-Men. I like that guy, Nick Bradshaw.
It's so
good. He draws some pretty good stuff.
He draws like Art Adams, but everybody's tiny.
It's incredible.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, let's see. What should we do here?
What you got?
Let's answer this viewer mail question.
All right, what you got?
We don't have a theme song. Let's make one up.
Theme song.
Here comes the viewer mail.
Everybody sending mail to us.
Viewer mail.
Viewer mail.
We like the viewer mail.
All right, so our question.
Yep.
We have one question.
Riddle me this.
If you had to pick any comic character to work at the store with you, who would you guys pick?
Boom, Multiple Man. Done.
Boom, Madrox the Multiple Man.
He would do everything.
He's a multiple tasker.
But you're assuming that he'd like be a good employee.
I'd have an infinite army.
He'd just be like, no, I'll get one of these other multiple men to do it. He'd be like, I'll get another multiple man to do it.
Yeah, whatever. The store would be filled with like 100 multiple.
That's true.
I would pick Bolivar Trask. He could be the manager, and then all the stores could be run by wild sentinels. Nice. Aren't those like the crazy deformed sentinels?
Something like that.
Yeah. And then we could have a Nimrod that works Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday. Oh, wait, we already do. Ayo.
Nice.
What about you, Jared?
I'd get some BAMFs.
Oh, just like all the little BAMFs?
Not all of them, but a bunch of them.
Yeah.
They'd just be entertaining. They'd destroy the store, but it'd be funny.
Is it weird? I think, like, you know, the BAMFs are these, like, little Nightcrawler things from another dimension that are in Wolverine and X-Men. But more mischievous. But is it weird to me, BAMF sounds like some sort of, like sexual acronym?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It is actually an acronym for badass MF.
Yep.
So, I wonder, I guess that's...
Huh. I never
now, every that. Time Nightcrawler... does a teleportation, everybody's going to be like, this dude is a BAMF.
Damn!
You'll be like, damn, Nightcrawler.
Just teleported.
Yeah, indeed. And then he says, also, would you pick the same characters to work at all the different Big Planet shops?
Oh, I take it back. The BAMFs would work at the other stores because they destroy it, but it'd be hilarious. So I need someone to work with us. It'd
you
be
do.
More fun.
How about just somebody smart?
Oh, man.
Nah.
Nah. Who, Jared? Who?
Probably wouldn't put up with this.
MODOK.
Oh, MODOK would be amazing.
MODOK.
He'd be floating around, bumping into all the shelves and trying to pick up comics and
he would be
them.
MODOK, spelled MODOCS, the mechanical organism designed only for customer service.
Isn't it mental organism? Or is it?
I think it's mechanical organism.
I think it's mental organism.
Oh, geez.
Modified?
My organism? Whole life has been a lie. All right, so... And Christian also says, did I even mention this question was from Christian?
Nope. Hey, Christian.
It is from Christian. He also says, also, thanks for making me buy the King City collection. It's superb.
It is
a most excellent comic book.
And then he gives us a high five by writing high five.
High five.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Do I have a high five sound effect?
That's
that sheep says, yes, I do.
That is a Greek high five.
All right, cool. Well, if you guys have any questions for us, you
Riddles.
Can send them to... Yeah, if you guys want to riddle me something. Yeah, send us a riddle.
Ooh, challenge to everyone, but especially I'm calling you out, Jessica. I want a riddle.
I'm going to go with you don't bury survivors as the answer.
Yep.
One of them was not a nickel. Nice. All my riddles I know from The Cosby Show.
Nice.
All right, but anyway, if you do have questions or riddles or limericks, dirty limericks, send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com or send them to Facebook at... theinternet.com or send them to Twitter, which is @bigplanetcomics.com.
Send them to Nantucket.
You don't have to, but if you want to.
That's true.
You should.
It makes it more entertaining for you if you do.
Or for us.
For somebody. That's the secret part.
Oh, yeah. That is the secret part. All right. Let's do some reviews. There's a bunch of books this week. Let's review them. I'm going to do something crazy this week.
Do it up.
We usually do our reviews in alphabetical order.
Do we?
Roughly.
I'm going to do these reviews in reverse alphabetical order.
Snap. You got to label up that sound bank.
Right? I have no idea what any of these sounds are. Anyway, so our first book is titled ZZZZZZZ.
I thought it was Zax the Zulu Warrior.
We have 40,000 books that we're going to review this week.
Oh, God.
No, our first book is X-Men Season 1 hardcover. By Dennis Hopeless and Jamie McKelvey. So this is the second book in the season one hardcover line. The first one was Fantastic Four. And basically these things just take the origins of these Marvel characters or teams and kind of reimagine them in a more modern setting.
Yeah. Like if they'd happen now. Yeah. I would like to quote Mr. Christian and say this was superb. It's... I don't know. I just felt like it kind of took the drama of the old original X-Men series and like... just made it seem more realistic. Like the dialogue was better, and just like it mainly followed Jean Grey as her introduction to the school, and like all the other people were already there at the time, so it was kind of like she's the introductory character that you follow her viewpoint along. But then Jamie McElvey just had like the perfect art for this. I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It focuses mostly on the relationships between. It's the relationships are crazy. It's like, yeah. Jean Grey is like in love with Cyclops.
No, she's not.
And
sort of
in love with Angel, and he kind of doesn't know what's going on. And Iceman is in love with Beast, not in that kind of way, but. And then Beast.
Bromance.
Yeah, Beast is like tired of all of it, and it's cool. It's a very concise origin story.
Very soap opera, but it also throws in like the like Magneto's there, and like the Brother of Evil Mutants shows up, and it's all the high points of the early X-Men stuff, like, but in a tight story.
Almost completely focused on the relationships, and then it'll cut to like a scene of them like in the Savage Land, or like a scene of them fighting like Eunice the Untouchable. Or...
Yeah, and all the action scenes in this are actually in service of the relationships that are in the book, which is always the right way to do things, I feel like, when you're doing these superhero things.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly.
And yeah, like Jared said, Jamie McElvey's art is great in it. I think he just keeps getting better and better. I love Phonogram, but I think this might be the best thing he's ever drawn.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And Dennis Hopeless's dialogue is really funny.
Yeah, he's kind of a new writer, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's done a few things. Legion of Monsters miniseries that came out a few months ago, and that was great. Yeah,
overall, this was a really good book.
Really good.
I thought.
It's an up-and-comer.
Good coloring.
Yeah,
that's just really, really well paced.
Really good.
Yeah, just good production all around. And then it has at the end the first issue of the new Uncanny X-Men series to kind of be like, here's what's going on now.
Yep. So
it's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely good. It's definitely cool.
Get it.
Get it indeed. No, it was. I liked it.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on, we've got Uglies Shea Story. This is written by Scott Westerfield and Devin Grayson, who is no relation to Dick Grayson. And this is drawn by Stephen Cummings, who is no relation to E.E. Cummings, I assume.
You never know. There's some weird stuff in the world out there.
But Uglies is a series of young adult novels written by Scott Westerfield.
Yep, he's done four, I think.
Yeah, it's Uglies, Pretties, Extras, and something else. But
and book number four.
And book number four or three.
Specials.
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 Indeed. Is that what it is? Yeah, that is what it is.
Sure. Wow.
Yeah. And if it's not, then it's not.
Sounds good, though.
But I guess the basic premise of the book series and this is that it's a world where... When you turn 16, everybody gets an operation that turns them into a pretty, which is just like a basically like Abercrombie and Fitch model version of a human.
Yeah, like the idealized human being.
Yeah.
But in a very like homogenous fashion. So you're all basically looking the same, not like distinctive from each other too much.
All white, by the way.
Indeed. Yeah. And then everybody in the world is kind of trained as they're younger to hate the way they look so that they kind of buy into this. So they all have nicknames. Like the main girl is called Skinny in this. Yeah. And then the other ones all have like weird nicknames.
Like Stretch.
Yeah, they're all nicknames about their physical flaws, basically. Yeah. You know, they're not really flaws.
So like any good sci-fi sort of homogenized society book, this follows a character who does not want to live in that homogenized society and tries to get out. And it's a pretty interesting story.
So basically the beginning of it is this group of four friends who are all below the 16 age cutoff of becoming a pretty. And they call themselves the Crims or criminals. And they are basically teenage rebel juvenile delinquents. And they end up using their hoverboards, which I thought was a nice touch, to basically explore outside of the civilized areas and find the ruins of a previous civilization. And there they meet a kid who says that he grew up outside in the wilderness and there's a society where there is not this judgment and that there's not the elevation to being a pretty. So they have to make the choices. Will they escape society? Will they leave their families? What do they want to do?
Yeah, and that place is called The Smoke, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, and so this follows the main girl. I think her name is Shay.
Yep.
And from what I understand, because I haven't read any of that books, actually, this is a parallel story to the story of the first book.
Yeah,
the first book is about her best friend who appears in this as well.
Yeah, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, the weird thing about that is this story seems like it would be more interesting than her friend's story.
I'm quite curious because the friend shows up later in the story than at the very beginning, and maybe it was just because it was later in the comic and they just didn't give as much time to her. She seemed very uninteresting. Except as like a weird foil to Shay, and so I thought Shay's story was fantastic. Yeah. So hopefully the other character, you know, it's always interesting when you see something from a different perspective of the same story. But
her introduction was a little like out of nowhere, like
kind of rushed.
Like,
yeah.
Halfway through the book, she's like, "Hi, I'm this girl," and they're like, "Oh, let's be friends." And
well,
like,
I think that speaks to this book as a whole, where it seems like it's written for people who are fans of series. I mean, there are a lot of interesting ideas in here, but
it was most of it was pretty easy to follow. I think.
Yeah, no, I think it was. Yeah. Yeah, I know Eden, who has been on the show before.
Yep.
She's a big fan of these books, and just from reading this, they seem pretty interesting. I actually thought that this was a fun little graphic novel.
Yeah, and the art was very manga'd up, but like in a good way. It like fit the kind of very dramatic, you know, teens in peril and like emotional turmoil sort of storyline.
Yeah, unlike last week, we were talking about Friends with Boys. At the end of this, I was like, "Oh, there's so many things unresolved," and then it said "to be continued." I was like, "All right,
nice. That's what problem solved."
That's what I like to see.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Overall, I thought this was good. One small problem I had with the art was that I felt like maybe the uglies and the pretties looked a little too much like each other. That to me, I couldn't really tell a difference between
the
before and after of some of the people.
I think part of it was supposed to be that like a lot of them were already pretty and they were just like obsessed with it for no reason.
But then they should have played up like the distinctiveness of the regular kids, just showing them that they're not idealized, you know, blonde Abercrombie kids or whatever, but they still look okay. But yeah, they didn't.
I wonder, is there any other races in this universe?
I couldn't tell.
Everybody was definitely white.
They definitely seem to be white kids.
Everybody, even the adults.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pretties, everybody was white.
Yeah, and that may be an element of the books too.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, I feel like...
No, I think I was reading, I looked up a little bit on this too. I think this is like chemical skin peels. It sounds like the actual pretty process is awful. Like really dramatic.
Well, yeah, I mean they break their bones and like restructure their faces. And
so
stuff.
Maybe they do make everyone look a certain.
And everybody kind of looks the same.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I'd say if you're a fan of these books, definitely. Read
yeah,
this.
Sure. But yeah. Even on its own,
and
it was interesting.
And even on its own, I thought it was fun. I mean, I'll read the next volume when it comes out.
Me too. Enjoy
it. It's got cool ideas and it's just great art too.
But yeah, I got the book for Christmas as a present. I'm going to read it.
Oh, nice. All right, so that was Uglies Shay's story. Up next, we have The Secret History of D.B. Cooper by Brian Chiria. Is that how you say that?
Sharia.
Yeah. This is a new book from Oni.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's pretty insane.
It's pretty great. If you're not familiar with Brian Chirilla or Chiria, I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Sure.
But he drew a series called The Anchor that came out.
Oh, my God. I forgot that was him. I knew his art looked really
familiar. I think it was also Oni, maybe.
Yeah.
It was like Oni or something like that.
It was... A small publisher like Oni or Boom or something.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with him, his art's very kind of, I don't even know how to explain it. It's kind of Mike Mignola-esque.
Or Michael Avon Oeming.
Yeah, yeah. And basically this is like, if you don't know who D.B. Cooper is, he's a guy who stole a lot of money and parachuted out of an airplane and disappeared along with the money.
Oh, true story.
Yeah, that's a true story, yeah.
Yeah, it's the crazy part.
And this, it's like... It supposes that he was like an agent for the government that was
a psychic mind assassin.
Yeah,
there's a little weird thing about that.
Yeah,
I don't feel like you should be able to have a character named Agent Cooper just because of Agent Cooper.
No,
yeah. That's weird. Anyway,
but yeah. Anyway, he's fighting people inside their minds, sort of. He's a telepathic assassin, like you said.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, the real Dan Cooper, or the pseudonym of whatever this guy's, whoever this hijacker was, this happened in either 71 or the late 60s, so, like, the height of the Cold War.
Yeah.
So the character in this one is literally, like, he's being trained to go in and kill, like, Soviet generals and stuff.
Yeah, he, like, explodes the guy's head.
And basically, the way he does that is by going into his mind and fighting, like, crazy monsters that represent his... psyche,
and then using a magical sword he found inside. It's bananas.
Yeah, and all of this is done through LSD, which is amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
The art was great. The coloring was really good. All the kind of inside of the people's head stuff was cool. It reminded me of like The Goon or something.
Yeah,
but with like weird organic mushroom stuff.
Yeah. I'm a really big fan of his art. I love The Anchor. If you guys haven't read that, definitely check that out, and definitely check this out.
Yeah, for sure. That is The Secret History of D.B. Cooper.
Yes, sir.
All right, next up we got Saucer Country, number one. This is written by Paul Cornell, who wrote, I don't know, a bunch of stuff.
Sure did.
He wrote Captain Britain and MI-13 and Wisdom and a bunch of stuff that Nick likes a lot. And the art in this is by Ryan Kelly, who also drew a bunch of stuff.
Yep.
But Local is the one that comes to mind for me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
great.
So this is a new Vertigo series.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure is.
Yeah.
It's very Vertigo.
It is very Vertigo. One thing after I read this, I guess I'll say what it's about first. It's about this woman who's running for president, and but at the same time she's kind of having this breakdown, and she's it's because she was abducted by aliens, it seems.
Yep. But there's some interesting elements beyond that. That's the twist to it. But that she's had an abusive relationship with her husband, and she's just getting a finalized divorce. So there's like a lot of like social, and she's Hispanic. So there's a lot of social issues of like, can this divorcee Hispanic woman, you know, break through all those, you know, barriers to run successfully for the president of the United States? And so a lot of it's like, you know, what hard decisions will she have to do? Will she have to come out and say that her husband was beating her when they were married and stuff like that? And so there's a lot of those issues on top of it. And then the twist is that, yeah, she was not just weird about stuff, but abducted by aliens. Yeah.
And there's also this like college professor that's another character in it who like talks to these two little maybe figments of his imagination that are like giving him advice.
Yeah. And he is like writing books about UFOs and stuff, and he's getting fired for it. And it's amazing.
It's pretty cool. I mean, it's a pretty good first issue for a Vertigo comic. Yeah. You know, it gets the point across pretty well.
What point was that, Nick?
I mean, you get the gist of the story.
Okay.
Better. It's going to be about her running for president and the fact that she's been abducted by aliens and aliens me.
Unfortunately, I thought it was good, but I kind of got the sense from it of like, this isn't going to last for very long.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah. It's like, it's a cool story, but it's just, I don't know if it'll grab people like some of the other stuff.
It's not like a bunch of a punch or just like a weirder twist or something.
Yes, yeah. Just something intangible.
Yeah, because like, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I did too. I just don't.
But you don't think like it's going to grab enough people?
Yeah, like we had our Wednesday today at the store. I mean, I didn't really feel like a lot of people were grabbing this off.
What we were talking about, it's a terrible cover. It has like aliens in like a very dark background that you can't really see them.
Yeah,
it's a weird cover.
Which fits the theme, but that they're like maybe a figment of our imagination or whatever, but you can't tell it a comic like that.
Yeah, but if that sounds interesting at all, definitely pick it up, because I'd like to see really this good. Go a while, because I feel like it's going to be a cool story.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway. Paul Cornell needs.
That's Saucer Country number one. It's weird. There wasn't a lot to say about this first issue, but except the stuff that we did say.
Yep, it's good.
All right, so moving on to a really strange book. This is the Queen Crab hardcover.
Oh my goodness.
This is by Jimmy Palmiotti and Artiz Iguerin.
It is.
And
about a crab woman.
Yeah, it is about a crab
this
woman.
Is the weirdness.
Yeah, it's ripped from the headlines of
a woman who turned into a crab.
No, but like there's been at least one, maybe more than one, instances where people go on cruise and then like end up disappearing.
There are at least four or five major cases.
There's at least one really big case in the news recently where this guy's wife disappeared and they suspect that she got murdered or thrown off the boat or whatever. And so this takes that idea, and this woman's married this guy, and he's kind of skeezy and throws her off the cruise ship on their honeymoon. And instead of dying, she appears in Coney Island with crab claws for arms.
That is definitely what happens.
Yep.
She attempts to get revenge and then swims with some dolphins. The thing is, this was kind of like all over the place.
It really was.
I think that's a good description.
Yeah, Nick is taking like one of the storylines in this.
I wasn't sure what this was about. I mean, it was about a woman who got crab arms and stuff, but
yeah, it was like about a bunch of weird things. It was about like, I don't know, the one thing about this, I didn't feel like any of the things that were happening sort of worked into a bigger theme of a story in this. It was just kind of like
a lot of different
stuff
things
happening
together, but yeah, not tied together.
Yeah, like it's a revenge story in some parts, and then it seems like it's kind of a horror thing, but it's never
like a drama, weird, like weird social stuff. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's just whatever.
Yeah, it was just whatever, and the art was really not that great.
No, not great.
See, my problem is like I was fine with it, just like the weird, you know, like, you know, this girl's getting married to this guy and she doesn't really quite know what she's getting into, and then this weird twist and he throws her over the ship's edge.
Yeah.
And I'm like, cool. And then this weird crab thing happens and I'm like, what?
And there's a lot of weird sexual things that are out of place.
That's true.
Yeah, there's like a very kind of forced in there lesbian sex scene that is obviously just meant to titillate and be this weird.
It could be a little bit about how she's lets herself gets taken advantage of, which is kind of the theme, but he doesn't do it very well as telling the story.
Yeah. That's what I feel was like a lot of you could see maybe what he was going for.
Sure,
at points.
That's my point.
And I don't know. It was like, do you guys remember Octopus Girl?
Yeah.
It was like Octopus Girl's amazing because it's like a comedy about a girl that gets kind of tortured and drowned by her friends and becomes an octopus and gets crazy revenge on them. And it's like silly and over the top, and so it works. But this is like, the whole story is kind of like a little bit somber and
it's not moody.
Yeah, it's a mess. I don't think any of us really liked it that much.
No,
I found it compelling, but it failed. Like it, and it gets to the end, and it's not like it's a Nick story. I wanted more, and it did not happen.
Yeah, I was like, I kind of like where this is going. Yeah, oh, exactly. This is not going anywhere.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. So,
that's Queen Crab hardcover. Definitely don't check it out. All right, so let's move on to something that was amazing instead,
which is
No Brow 6, the double.
Oh yeah. Ooh,
should I list all the people that are in here?
I don't think you can. It'll take too long.
All right. Well, I'll talk about some of my favorite people that are in here.
Please do that.
Joseph Lambert.
Oh yep. Yeah.
Michael DeForge.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Luke Pearson.
Yep.
Kevin Huizenga.
Yep.
Those are John Martz.
Mikhail Sommer.
The guy who did Goliath.
Malachi Ward. Tom Gold.
They're all in there.
Yeah, they're all in here. So this is half art. Like the other No Brow volumes, the first five were just basically all art books.
Yeah.
Great art books, you know, yeah. with that No Brow production and all that great stuff about
like a them. Showcase for the No Brow artists, basically.
But then the second half of this, which is more interesting to me, is all comics.
Yeah.
And they're all based around the theme of a double. So they're all about people with doppelgangers, or people approach the theme from different ways.
Yeah. Some really interesting takes.
Like
on
the John Martz story, for example, is just like a series of panels of like different kinds of doubles that there
that
can
was
be.
One of my favorites.
And it's really funny. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it'll have a doppelganger, but then it's like player two, and it's like the guys from Double Dragon.
Exactly the same.
Yeah. And then like Kevin Huizenga's approach is like totally different and totally weird.
Crazy weird.
It's like about words that are formed by these like organic creatures. And
yeah, it's like whenever you say a sentence, it's like it appears on another plane of existence where these creatures thrive off of it. It's really weird.
Yeah, and then like Joe Lambert's story is about like two sisters, and like the Grim Reaper is coming after one of them and confuses them, and then they like fight the Grim Reaper and then play soccer.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it's great. I loved it.
Yeah, but there's just a ton of great stuff in it.
Yeah.
The Michael DeForge one is about like if having sex with your doppelganger counts as incest.
Yeah.
But
it's like an emotional drama story.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of cool, weird things, and there's a lot of so many variations in the art. But all the art was great.
Yeah, even if it wasn't my type of style, but they're all so talented.
Even if some of the stories were kind of like,
that's true.
But the majority of them were great, and the art takes it to another level. It's just good stuff.
And like all No Brow books, the presentation is just beautiful.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I mean, we've talked about the way they do colors before.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's just awesome.
Yeah. And since this is the double issue, you can then, after reading half of it, flip it over, and the other backside of this is all these artists doing a two-page illustration spread. So the issue itself is a double.
Yeah. And like, I'm not usually as big of a fan of art books, but the art side of this is amazing as well.
Yep.
And you get a lot of content in the comic side too.
Oh, so yeah, definitely.
It's definitely a very cool anthology and worth checking out.
For sure.
All right, so next up we've got Crossed Badlands.
Oh, yeah.
This is Garth Ennis returning to the Crossed series.
Finally.
Which, some people don't know what Crossed is. Crossed is basically
it's like kind of like a zombie apocalypse, except instead of people turning into zombies, they turn into basically their primal desires. They just want to, like, have sex and kill things, basically.
And destroy stuff and just like,
And it's always really gross.
Yeah. It is extremely gory. It's always kind of and over the top.
The one thing about this is like, it's well written and it's really cool, and there's some gross things that happened in it, but it felt a lot like the other Cross comics where they were all focused on a group that was trying to survive getting attacked by the Cross and finding different ways to escape them and survive, and then coming into contact with them and fighting them and then surviving some more, which has kind of been what's happened in all the Cross series.
Yeah. And like, but it's also the kind of thing that happens in all kind of survival horror zombie-ish things. The thing that this is more like the movie The Signal, if anybody ever saw that, which is almost exactly like Cross.
Start going insane and
I should say the art in this is by Jason Burroughs,
who drew the first series.
I think this is like the best he's really gotten better.
Yeah,
like his earlier stuff was like the Avatar house style, which is competent but kind of not great. And this, he's gotten good.
No, it's great. And the coloring in this is really good, too. Yeah.
But it is definitely not for the faint of heart.
No.
Well, the thing is, this is the least gross of the crossed books so far.
That's true.
But there is one scene in this book that involves a baby that I think would be very off-putting to a lot of people.
Yeah. Not as off-putting as the other crossed baby things that have happened.
That's maybe true. Yeah.
But, I mean, first of all, this is a bi-weekly ongoing series with a rotating group of writers and artists.
Yeah, Ennis is writing the first three, and then Jamie Delano is taking over after that, which I can't say I'm terribly excited about.
Yeah,
did he write the second Cross mini?
No, it was David Lapham.
Yeah.
He's written, what did he write?
He started Hellblazer.
Yeah, Hellblazer.
Yeah, and a bunch of other Vertigo stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he did Outlaw Nation,
which was
an awesome really series.
Yeah. I mean, I like the idea that this is kind of has a rotating cast of writers and different stories and
throughout the
universe.
Throughout the three previous crossed minis, they've definitely created a universe, and I feel like this.
Yeah,
I think doing a bi-weekly series plays into that pretty well.
The thing I like about this had two elements that were different from the other ones. This seemed to be set later than the other cross series, like years after this has happened, so they've learned how to survive in the crossed universe, across world, and also that Prince Harry, one of the British princes, might be one of the characters.
It's like this guy with his disfigured face who says he's Prince Harry,
which is awesome.
It's awesome. I mean, if you like the other cross stuff, this is definitely up to par, and maybe even a little bit better than.
In some ways, it's a little more story and less gore, but that might mean it's worse. Yeah.
It's definitely not as disturbing as the last miniseries, Cross Psychopath, there's this...
The trade of that came out today, too.
It's so messed up.
It's great, though. I loved it. I thought that was one of the best ones so
It's
far.
Definitely the most grotesque.
It was appalling.
Appalling.
But it's a little different from the other ones, because the other ones are all about people surviving and dealing with this messed up stuff. But this that one's about, somebody who's already completely disturbed and messed up in this world, using the cross to his advantage.
Yeah.
It's cool. But anyway. It's cool.
Yeah. Check it out. Yeah. All the cross stuff is I really enjoy it.
If you read one cross thing, you probably like all of it.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And including this. Yeah. All right. So moving on to a book that we've all been waiting for a long time.
Ooh, do it.
This is Corto Maltese 1, The Ballad of the Salt Sea by Hugo Pratt.
Finally.
Jared's favorite artist of all time?
No, but one of them.
But one of them.
Yeah. He's also a huge influence on Paul Pope. He's basically one of those famous European guys that no one in America has really heard of. He became famous mainly for the Corto Maltese series, which started in the late 60s, and he did 14 stories of either, roughly album length or short stories with him and a few others. But he's done a lot of other stuff. We talked about the Monaro Library. Yep. He wrote two stories that Milo Monaro drew.
He wrote Indian Summer, right?
Summer, and then...
the other one.
El Gaucho, which was the other big story in the second book that came out. But yeah, he was a huge influence on a lot of people in his writing style. He's immensely popular in Europe. This one was the first story he did with Corto Maltese, which, like I said, was in the late 60s. Corto Maltese is the main character. He starts off where he is found.
I love his first appearance.
It's one of the best appearances of character ever. This captain, who's a real bastard, Rasputin, is sailing a ship in the South Pacific and finds on a raft tied down a man who's been thrown overboard by mutineers, and that is Corto Maltese.
Yeah.
He's basically a Han Solo type character if he fought people more and looked out for his own interests, but still had that heart of gold within his roguish, evil
He's like
exterior.
Han Solo before Han Solo met Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. He's like that if he would punch Luke Skywalker when he said something stupid.
Yeah.
So, another thing that Hugo Pratt's really well known for is he's very well researched in his historical comics. All the Corto stuff is set in World War One or before World War II. So this is right when World War One has started. Yeah. So it's like all these nationalities and all these political stuff going on, and like Germans and Japanese and British, and it's all playing together, and it's amazing. It's like 10-10 with more real world stuff in it, I'd say.
Yeah, and the core story of this is Rasputin is... God, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, that's
the
thing. It's the longest Corto story he did, and it's...
there's a kidnapping of two rich young kids, and Corto kind of ends up helping them out because Rasputin is maybe a lot worse than Corto thought he was going to be when he first started dealing with him.
Yeah, yeah. Corto kind of sides with the underdog a lot. That's one of his big benefits to his character. I mean, he sticks out for himself most of the time, but and then Rasputin works. Both he and Corto end up working for the monk, who's a mysterious figure who's lived for possibly 100 years in the South Pacific, and is now allied with a German submarine, which is going around sinking ships from the other army navies of the World War One. and then a lot of double crossings, and there's a lot of like native like Polynesians, and there's ships, and they're it's amazing.
Here's the thing.
Those are the good things about Corto Maltese.
And that's the good thing about Corto Maltese. It's a great story. This is the first one, so you get the good introduction to the character. Hugo Pratt is an amazing artist. I said he was an influence on Paul Pope, but he influenced a lot of people. He has a beautiful line. He does great things with blacks. Frank Miller is another huge fan of him, who's heavily influenced by him on his stuff. And he shifts up his art style a lot. He'll do like splotchy stuff that looks really great, but also very quick, sketchy stuff. Those are the good things.
Yeah. And his art looks really great when it's produced well on the page.
Yeah.
And yep.
Yeah. The thing about this is that it's got great art, and the story is pretty interesting. But this edition is no good.
Now we speak about this printed edition by Rizzoli Press.
I could tell that I would really like Corto Maltese if it was in a different format.
All right.
It has an amazing cover.
Yeah.
And when Corto was false done in the 60s, it was black and white. And then in the late 90s, right before Hugo Pratt died, they did a color edition. This is a color version.
All right. So we'll start out with kind of the biggest glaring thing in this is it looks like the black and white artwork in this was scanned at too low of a resolution as a bitmap. So it's very jaggy.
And pixelated.
And you lose a lot of the smoothness and power, I think, of Hugo Pratt's artwork.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really big downside to this edition. Jared was showing me, he has the
one of the older
the British edition that came out like in the 90s, I think, and the production on that is so much better than this. It's weird, it makes a lot of the lines seem really thin, and then Hugo Pratt uses a lot of really sketchy lines as well, which look great, but then when they're all sort of jagged and pixelated like this, it's really off-putting.
All right.
It was really disappointing.
I got more complaints. I know you guys do too. One is this was retranslated by some guy who apparently writes for CSI or some other
Law and Order.
Law and Order, there you go. And he gets a credit on the back flap, like it's like Hugo Pratt, blah 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 blah. And then it has this guy, and it's like, you translated this. You didn't write this book. It's not like you came up with a new amazing edition of, you know, Solzhenitsyn or Beowulf. You're just some guy who took a great comic book and retranslated it. Unfortunately, as Kevin has pointed out by comparing this translation with the older ones, he did a not good job.
Yeah, it's not so great. I'm trying to find some of the particular pages where I could really...
No, you should look at the new version and read some of that dialogue.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to find to compare here. I don't want to take too long doing this, but let's see.
Another thing is the colors are very like a very light. Hugo Pratt himself did a lot of watercolors. He did covers and stuff for his, and he did some like character studies that were included in like deluxe editions of his work. And so I think the coloring this kind of is trying to match that style, and it was definitely originally done in color when he was still alive, so I assume he approved of it. But a lot of the colors just don't match the black and white art style very well. There's like scenes where people fall off of a boat and are underwater. And instead of doing his very fine detailed work, he'll do like very splotchy, like you're looking at someone in a shadowy underwater area. And when it's colored, it just looks muddy. Yeah. Admittedly, like the print job on this is not the best, but that might be another flaw with it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the stuff I'm talking about.
Just pick one.
Yeah.
Read it and I'll find it another page.
So. All right. So here we go. I've got...
So Kevin will read the new edition with the bad translation.
Okay. So there's a part here where Corto's talking to Kane, one of the kids that's been kidnapped.
Yep.
And Corto says something to him, and Kane says, "You're not as witty as you think, pal. Do us a favor and leave us in peace." And Corto says, "Well, I never. What a package on all but 2 feet. But this isn't good. I'm not making you laugh, really?" Okay, then the old translation.
Old version, Kane says, "You really think you're smart, don't you? You'd be wiser to go away and leave us in peace." And Corto says, "Oh, really? That's not very nice of you. So you don't find me funny?" Almost a natural way to speak.
Like the way people talk.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff like that in here. Like one of the lines, it's like a page later, Rasputin says, "The family will pay just as much for one as..." "The family will pay just as much as for one as for two. So I lose nothing if I get rid of the boy."
And in this one he says, "The family will pay the same ransom for one or for both of them. Getting rid of the boy will be easy enough. Is that clear?"
Yeah, so it's like...
Yeah.
It's just it was so stilted that and because there's so much going on in the book and in the storyline that trying to kind of suss out what these people are meant to be saying makes it a really frustrating.
Yeah, like the big thing is like this is, as we were just trying to say, a very convoluted story. There's a lot of people talking and there's like, you know, bits of Polynesian history and people are debating like the political setup of the time as they're just about to enter World War One and stuff like that. But here is why this is the most egregious edition I've seen of a book in a long time. This is, like we said, oh, it's also shrunk down. Like the original one was album size, which is Europeans, like what, 10, no, 9 by 12 or something, whatever size, how big this is.
Yeah, yeah, big.
This new one is what, 6 by 9 or something. So they shrunk it down. That is, we complain about that a lot, that European album size, just people don't like buying it in America. They don't like it, storing it. So they typically, to save money also, they'll shrink it down. I mean, this is a book is in color. It's only $25, so you're getting a good package for it.
Which is understandable, but then sometimes other things happen.
Yes. So comparing the two of these, with the old edition with the new, what I realized they did is they took the panels and refit them on a page. So this is not a single page shrunk down. They took about two-thirds of each page, refit the panels together to fit on the right page, and then took the one-third, moved it onto the next page, which is all fine and good because these are all square panels. But some of them, they're not regular square. They're a lot of rectangles. So comparing the editions, they literally have cut and cropped parts of the art out.
Oh, wow, really?
Yep. So, like, you're complaining, geez. Like, there's so much text in this that at a bigger size, it's not as noticeable, and, you know, it fits the art better. For example, let's look at the first page. The first page, this is the typical European style, is a set of like four rows across and then panels up and down. This has a giant opening panel, which is a catamaran with a lot of text around it and takes up half a page. Then below it, it has two more rows. What they did in this new colored edition is they made that two-thirds of the page with one panel and then took two-thirds of the third line and made that a whole stretch line, which means that all the text crowds around the stuff and then they move stuff onto the next page.
Wow, they There's cut off like a third of the panel. There's a beautiful
page of a panel of him sitting in a wicker chair and a third of that with no dialogue is cut off.
Wow.
Jeez.
So you can't... I've read the entire color edition. You get the full story. So besides the terrible translation job, you will get this story. But the art is not all there. And there's like, he does a lot of like full like panels that go like widescreen across an entire row.
Yeah.
I saw one in here that got cut in half with one part up in the top and one part down the bottom.
Oh, geez.
And there's a scene where there's a fight in the house where Cordo and Rasputin are punching each other. And just all you see is the house. And such a fight. The house starts falling apart like in Buffy. And it works beautifully on these. That's the other thing. The bigger edition is written with the like beats and natural flow of here's the end of a page.
Yeah.
Like stuff happens, blah, 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 note, break, beat, next page starts up again. Yeah. And you don't even notice it because it just flows so naturally when you're reading this big format. You read it in the smaller cut up version and it's completely unnatural. It just happens all over the place and for no good reason.
I didn't
egregious.
Know that. Yeah,
I didn't know it either.
Unforgivable.
This is one of the biggest muck-ups.
I'm literally going to write these guys, the publisher, the editor. Someone should have, like, I cannot, this would never have happened if Hugo Pratt had been alive. Like, it's appalling.
Yeah,
it's
that's
like
that's
the
really
most
bad.
Offended I've been. Like, it's basically the pan and scan of of a comic book. And I will say again that this is one of my favorite comics of all time. The Ballad of Salt Sea is great, and it is a classic for a good reason. Sadly, a lot of you will not understand why reading this new version.
That's and I didn't make it through the whole thing.
Yeah,
I was struggling. I was struggling with
the dialogue
mostly, and without the bad reproduction of the art.
Oh God,
that was pulling me away from it. I mean, Jared just found this panel in here that's like,
so this is the one of the most egregious ones. It's a beat at the end of a page in the original where Cordo is leaning up on the wall watching a sunset in the Pacific, and he's just contemplating the terrible fix everybody's in. And in this one,
it's so gross.
They've cropped the left side, they've cropped the right side, they've zoomed in, they've stretched the panel down like a minuscule amount so that whoever did this had to fill in some blacks to make it fit the panel. And then his beautiful thin lines, which are showing the beams of sun coming across the setting sky, are blurred and just terribly thick.
It looks like somebody redrew the lines in like Notepad.
That's what I'm
getting. It's really terrible.
And that's one of the most pixelated panels in
the
book,
too. That's one of the worst panels in the whole thing.
It's, yeah, it's bad.
So,
this is a damn shame.
Yes. So, sadly, though, I almost will say I still recommend you buy this because it is so awesome. It's just, you're not going to understand why I want you to buy it.
I don't.
Yeah, that's the problem.
For me, I was going to buy this book and now I'm not going to buy it.
Yep.
And I was really excited about this. And
yeah, I was excited to finally read this. And then I was like, I can't read
this. And when I was reading it, I was like, there's something really wrong with this. Yeah. And then looking at like you showing me this shows me.
Yeah. Yep.
Because there's no flow to it.
No.
But like you were talking about, there's a geometry and an architecture to a page.
If someone's a great artist, and Hugo Pratt is, and he did his original layout like that.
Think about if somebody took a Karl Barks page and did something similar to it. It just wouldn't work because the pages flow in a certain way. And like the way you read a comic, you start in one place and you're meant to end on another place on a page. And if it's really well done, it works perfectly. But if you're cutting it up and changing it, your eyes may be potentially moving in the wrong direction because you're not on the page you're supposed to be on and all this other stuff. It's a pretty bad.
It's a hack job.
It is a hack job.
Yes, literally.
Now, I don't know if this
hatchet
is the
job.
I don't know.
Hatchet, yeah.
I don't know if this is the same as the other color edition that came out.
I can't imagine. No.
But even if it is, it's still not the same as the original, which when you're reproducing something like this is just unforgivable.
Yeah. And like you'll see this new color edition and the cover's beautiful. They did a great job. Well reproduced, good quality, good, resolution on it.
It's a good package, but
then you look on the inside and you're like, why didn't you do the rest?
Yep. All right. Well, that's Quarter Maltese.
I don't want to talk about it anymore.
The Ballad of the... I think people understand.
Biggest disappointment of 2012.
I think that's fair. And that's unfortunate, because we were very excited about this book.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, finally people are going to get to read Quarter Maltese.
Yep.
And now I don't know if I can really recommend this to people.
No. Nope.
All right. So moving on to... things that almost don't seem worth talking about after this, let's talk about Avengers Prelude, Fury's Big Week, number one.
Switching gears, but anyway,
this is by Chris Yost and Eric Pearson and Luke Ross. It's tying together all of the Nick Fury stuff from the movies and sort of making them tie into the Avengers movie that's coming out next month.
Yeah. I mean, if you've seen all the movies and you've been interested in how all the Nick Fury stuff flows chronologically, this is the book for you. It's very simple.
Jared is like visibly angry over the corner.
Yeah, he's still fuming over there. Well, anyway, so this is like Nick Fury. He's working for S.H.I.E.L.D. And S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of run by this shady government agency that tells Nick Fury what to do. And obviously Nick Fury doesn't do what they tell him. And this all ties in with scenes from various movies
Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, Iron Man 2, and
Incredible Hulk.
And
how they tie in chronologically and how it leads basically into the Avengers movie. It's pretty straightforward. If you like the movies, this is a good kind of... it's kind of a link between the movies. I mean, it's not like the best comic you'll read. It's well-written, competently drawn.
It made me just want to see the movie, though.
And if you're interested in the movie... it's a cool little intro.
Yeah, it is what it is, and it's all right.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to Avengers Assemble number one.
And now if you've already seen the movie.
this is by Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Bagley. And yeah, like Nick is saying, this is definitely the book, the Avengers book meant for people that only know the Avengers from the movie.
Yeah, Marvel has done a pretty good job of this. They did Invincible Iron Man started around the time Iron Man came out.
Mighty Thor.
And that was really accessible and great, and Mighty Thor is the same. And Captain America too. And this is the same. It's got, the exact team from the movie, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Hulk, Hawkeye, and Black Widow.
Yep.
And, it's a pretty straightforward introduction to the team. You get to meet the characters that are in the movie and see how they interact in this modern Marvel universe. There's some good humor in it and, there's a big threat introduced. It's pretty basic. It's very old school style, and that's kind of what Mark Bagley, I feel,
his art is like.
I feel he's brought into this to kind of reinforce that old school vibe.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Mark Bagley, but I can see how his art works for this, just because it's I don't want to say it's a kid's book, but it's a little more of a kid's book than the other Avengers stuff. It's a little simpler,
a little lighter,
and you don't get all the sort of politics and other crazy stuff that's been going on in the Avengers, you can definitely just jump right in and read this book and not be worried about all that other stuff.
It's straightforward superhero stuff. There's funny interactions between some of the characters, and then they fight, you know, the Zodiac.
Yeah, it's a very, very straightforward superhero comic.
And, you know, some it might be a little too simple for some people, but I liked it. It was fun enough, and I liked the dialogue. And
yeah, if you're coming in from the movies and that's all you know, it's fun, but if you're a regular Avengers fan, it'll seem lacking.
It feels like a new beginning. Like, they just build a new Stark Avengers Tower. And
that's true.
The Avengers just kind of went in front of the press and were like, we're ready to stand for America, and, you know, it feels like it's, you know.
Yeah, I do think it's the, even just after one issue, it's the worst of the Avengers books. But
not to say it's bad.
But not to say it's bad. But, you know, if you're looking for one book to buy Avengers wise, I would definitely go with something like just Avengers or New Avengers over this.
Secret Avengers.
Or Secret Avengers. Yeah, Secret definitely
Avengers is the best. Yeah, but if you just get coming into it, this is the great jumping on point for anybody who's not read Avengers in a while.
Yeah. All right, so that's Avengers Assemble number one. I decided to save the best for last this week.
What you got? Nice.
I got Saga number one.
No!
This is by Brian K. Vaughan, who wrote Why the Last Man, Ex Machina, Runaways.
Bride of Baghdad.
Yep, some of Lost.
Some of Lost.
And this has art by Fiona Staples, who drew...
North 40.
North 40.
And which is great.
Did covers for the Deviate miniseries that Brian Wood did, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way Brian Wood described this as a cross between Star Wars and Game of Thrones. Brian K. Vaughan.
Brian Wood said that too.
But I think that's probably pretty accurate.
Yeah. I guess I don't even know how to start.
Well, first, it's a double sized issue, right? Yeah. Like, it's only $3.
This is a great value.
Huge, epic beginning.
It's $2.99, 44 pages. You get the basic setup for the story. These two people from opposing sides in a galactic conflict or have a baby in the beginning of this. It's born, it's narrated by the baby, if obviously from later on, and then
hopefully
you get to see it does a good job of introducing the world. You see these two warring factions, and you see that they're fighting throughout the galaxy, and that they don't want these two people together because they want to kill each other. Basically, it's like Romeo and Juliet in space.
Right. It's these two people being together kind of undermines the whole war effort from these two sides. So so because of that, they're these kind of wanted fugitives.
They're also different species of aliens. They're not just different factions. These are different races.
And there's a lot of like animal hybrids and stuff like that.
Yeah. And they're considered very different classes as well.
True.
And yeah, so they introduce all these different factions. They're like the kind of just humans, like the almost like the Imperials from Star Wars. But then there's a robot faction as well.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of really crazy stuff going on in this comic.
Yeah, there's like
a lot of
magic,
just like background stuff, and it just throws in like a butler who works for one of these guys who just happens to be a humanoid crocodile who looks amazing.
Or like this mysterious woman who has like a unicorn horn.
But the main focus of the whole thing is just this kind of love story between these two people, and they have a baby at the beginning, and it's about them trying to stay together despite all these circumstances.
I thought the main focus of this was this two-page spread of a giant turtle fighting spaceships.
No. But that was probably the most incredible thing I've seen in a while. I mean, if you like Star Wars, you like Game of Thrones, you probably love this.
I think the problem here, we're not getting across, is all three of us love this and highly recommend it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I
think... Because it's hard to explain.
It is hard to explain. Like, there's so... every bit of dialogue in this feels important, and, like, it's going to be more important down the line. And there are so many characters introduced in this. I think in that's a way that it's similar to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, true.
It's almost, there's like an overwhelming amount of stuff going on. It's one of the few comics I've read recently where I'm like, I want to read this again.
Yeah, and
immediately.
There's a space assassin wearing a cape who has a giant cat, and he's smoking a hand rolled cigarette.
I forgot about him. There is so much going on in this issue.
It's so good. There's giant monsters and everywhere. Aliens, and but it's extremely focused. As much as that sounds like there's so much going on, it's just really focused and well-written.
And they had a couple of preview pages of this, and even just the cover itself. Like Fiona Staples' art just seemed a little, like, simplistic from that to me. But actually reading this issue, it's very good. It just fits so well for this.
And she's painting all the covers. I don't know. It's awesome.
Yeah. I'm glad we saved that one for last. That put me in a good mood.
Yeah,
me
this too. Is the best comic of the week by oh, far.
It's so good.
Yeah, no, this is better than Quarto Maltese.
Whoa,
it's better than the new edition of Quarto Maltese.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, but you shouldn't have brought that back up, Nick.
Oh, whatever.
God. I was so happy, and now I'm sad again.
Saga, I'm gonna book ever.
I'm gonna go listen to Joy Division.
it's probably gonna be our best new series of the year.
I think
you can call it right now.
I think you might be right about that. There might be something else that we don't know about yet.
Yeah, there'll have to be some crazy thing.
It would have to
out.
Be really good, though, because this is really good.
It was like, look, this book has been written by God.
All right, that's it. There was a lot of new stuff this week.
Yep.
Yeah.
So next week, we're going to have a book written by God.
Yes.
And it's going to burn your eyeballs out.
Yep.
All right, cool. Well, that's it for this episode.
Later, pilgrims.
Yeah, Jared is still fuming over in the corner. All right, we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
We'll be right back.